Welcome to the Curious Performer Podcast, the podcast for performers who want to grow. Are you ready? Ready to improve your show, to grow your business? Are you ready to build your brand? Then turn up the volume and get ready to hear from some of the best performers in the business. I'm your host, Keith Tussing, and I'll be asking the questions we're all curious about. Welcome to The Curious Performer. Today's guest is a children's book author and a balloon storyteller who brings reading assemblies and creative writing assemblies to elementary schools in Southern California. You can also find her hilarious balloon theater shows at libraries and community events all over Southern California. Yes, we're talking to Annie Banani, joining us today from, you guessed it, Southern California. Annie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Keith.
Glad to have you. I'm so excited to get to visit with you and find out all about what you're doing there in California. Well, hey, talking about balloon storyteller, that's how you are perceived, right? A balloon storyteller.
Mm-hmm. Buster came up with that particular name. He is the genius behind a lot of the great marketing that we do. He has this way of seeing things in a really unique way and being able to encapsulate something very, very well. And so I've done this forever, like even before I saw anybody else do it. It happened naturally because I have a musical theater background. So the first thing I'm thinking is, if I'm gonna make a, you know, it started out with like the sword. Well, if I make a sword, is it gonna be a knight? Are we gonna have a knighting ceremony? And so it just built itself from there. And I realized that, like, I have never really played with things. Like, even as a kid, I was never like, oh, here's my doll, and she's going to walk over here and hold it in your hand, you know, action figures. I never get excited about that. So if I'm going to make a balloon, I'm not going to make an action figure. I'm going to make, like, why don't you become a princess, or why don't you become a whatever? And I learned from some people who were really doing it and kind of knew how to do all the practical stuff, like wrangling the kids. He actually, when I said that that's kind of what I want to do, how to bill myself, Buster came up with that. And I was luckily the one to get the website. It was at the, you know, where we're still like, it was a big deal if you had the website. I mean, it still is, but like back then, it was even a big deal if you had a website.
And you can't live without one now at all.
You know, it's going a little bit different. I know a lot of businesses who don't have websites, but they've got a social media presence.
Well, that too. Still on the web.
Yeah, definitely on the web. That's a dangerous way to go, in my opinion, because I can see where you would want to use social media because that's awesome and everybody's there. But if you don't own your content like that, like it is mm-hmm. your content, but they can ban you at any moment for anything. We joke about being in Facebook jail because we've done something that violates the rules accidentally, and like then nobody can see your stuff. And so I don't like the lack of control. I'm kind of a control freak, which is funny for somebody who does improv for a living. With kids, you would think that I would not be a fan of control, but it's actually the other direction. I'm a big fan of controlling anything that I am in charge of. Like, I can't control anything else happening in the world, but I can control my reaction to and my perception of my actions and all of that. I've always been that person. You know, I like to control my little world. I don't need to control other people in my world. Just my world.
Just your world.
Yes, that's good. High maintenance, but I take care of all that maintenance myself.
All right. Now, you mentioned musical theater as your background. Tell us a little bit about that.
I always wanted to do musical theater since my mom brought home I was in elementary school, and somebody had taken her on a date or something to see Fiddler on the Roof, and she brought home the program. I fell in love. I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. I want to do this for the rest of my life. And I didn't get the courage to do it until I was in my 30s. Yeah. I got into music in third grade. That was great. But I've never been a good dancer. So I ended up doing opera in college because I was, that's what you did at this particular school I was at. If you were a musical theater, if you were a music education major. So I'd done opera. And then I started studying musical theater after I got out of school. And finally did, I think it was for 8 years, I did musical theater with being a double threat instead of a triple threat. Because so I can act and I can sing, but I can't dance. So I didn't do a whole lot of dinner theater, which was just, you know, that's my dream. It's so much fun to do. I've done 2 official dinner theater, like as a professional actress. And one of the ones was Nonsense. And I'm playing Sister Mary Amnesia, for anybody who knows musical theater. Mm-hmm. And she's got a thing where she does this dance. And everybody does a tap dance. And I like literally could not learn to dance. And so my director took my tap shoes and with a Sharpie on the bottom, and she didn't tell me she was going to do this. On the bottom, she put a great big L and R on the tap shoes. And she fixed the whole idea that I couldn't dance, that I don't have a good memory because I'm Mary Amnesia and I'm just loopy. Right. So like, and that's how I played the character anyway. So when everybody else is getting their tap shoes on, I'm like trying to figure out which shoe to put on which foot and showing the L and the R to the audience. And that I thought that director was really great at where you take an obstacle and you just like say, all right, this is an obstacle. How are we going to fix it by being creative? And I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was really huge to me. And also that's what got me interested in when I first started Balloons, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to do something like storytelling with a balloon puppet? I got into, you know, I wanted to do street theater and I have too soft a heart and too soft a shell to do street theater. I learned that the hard way. For years, I had the idea that, like, if you know that musical, Mary Amnesia has a puppet that she does a duet with. It's actually supposed to be done by a ventriloquist. But you can do it. I wasn't a ventriloquist. And I had a mic. So when the puppet talked, I just, you know, wearing a nun's habit, I just put her in front of my face. So yeah, it was pretty obvious that I wasn't a ventriloquist. But yeah, so that's actually one of the reasons I got into storytelling is because of theater. And it just made sense. But one thing that I thought was really interesting is balloon storytelling. It's where kids are my actors. I pull kids up and it's theater style storytelling where the kids are the actors, the balloons and the costumes and the props. And I'm the narrator. I kind of move kids around stage, sometimes even by like taking their shoulders and moving them into different places or telling them what to do. I situations where I narrate it and then they do it. And then there was a battle, you know. And one thing I learned is I wanted to use this for birthday parties too. When I started doing birthday parties, and I realized I couldn't get kids to do anything if there was a really small audience of mm-hmm. like 5 or 6 kids, especially if it was their family. And I had grown up around a lot of my friends who we didn't do this in my family, but they would just, if they would get together with their extended family, the kids would all disappear and go downstairs and make up a play. And then later on, it was like I remember one of them, it was a tradition for Christmas Eve. And so part of Christmas Eve tradition is watching the kids put on a show like that they just made up that day. I mean, that was just a normal thing. And I realized that we, you know, a lot of them are grew up in other countries. One specifically in Spain, she grew up in the Basque area of Spain. And that was just a normal thing to do. And for here, it's so foreign for American kids to do. We just don't have, you know, unless we're in a huge family, and we still don't do that. So they're very self-conscious in front of their family. And then, but if you get them up in front of their school or in front of a library, not only do you have more kids to pick from, of course, but you also have, it's like, I don't know, it's a different thing. Like, okay, this is a show, I'm supposed to be doing this and I'm supposed to be showing off and I'm supposed to be, you know, I actually find that looking back, I do have a little bit of stage fright, especially when singing, because if I'm singing for a family or something, there's only so many people to look at and they're really close and that feels weird. But if I'm singing for a couple of thousand people, not a problem at all. And it seems backwards, but it's because it's too personal.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, the size of the group has such an impact on what, especially kids, what they're willing to do, what they're willing to participate mm-hmm. in, and who is in the group makes such a huge difference. I think in a library setting, you're not so worried about what your friends are thinking, or you want to be a piece of the show, and pulling them up and getting them to do that is so much easier than in a small group.
And I think you also have the, in a library show, in a bigger show or a school show, you also have the audio feedback. And this is one of the things I don't like about doing outdoor shows. Because you don't have the sound bouncing off the walls. The first few outdoor shows, I thought I was terrible because I didn't know that I counted on that. And then people come up to me afterwards and said, oh, we had so much fun. We were over there. For one, they wander out and they find shade, right? I guess the flight time, like after a while, I realized we call it flight time in my family, my group of friends is you get better by just doing it. And
oh,
you just
sure.
have to suck for a while.
Yeah, I have a friend that used to talk about the idea of when you start something new or you've got a new show that you need to have a place where you can be bad. You know, go and
Absolutely.
Perform your show and be bad and get honest feedback so that you do get better. As you jumped into this as a profession, what moved you from acting into wanting to do?
You know how we all say, oh, I would do this for free. I love working. At the time, I've always been one like entrepreneurial. So the minute I saw balloons, I learned at my church and I saw the reaction to balloons. The first thing I thought is there's money in this. And not in a way of I'm going to, you know, not in a mercenary way. I've always thought, how can I have the most fun making a living no matter what I'm doing?
That's good.
Right. And it's so funny that like I have a background working for lawyers, but of course I worked for litigators, which wasn't fun, but it was super interesting, especially like if you were working for somebody who was working on a civil rights kind of thing. And it was super awesome to think, okay, so I've been working my tail off at musical theater for free or for very little, where they pay you $50 because they want you to have that credit of a professional, a professional credit, but that's all they have. So it's a stipend. And so you're really doing it for free. And then working full-time during the day in the law office. And I was, you know, I would be rehearsing one show during the week and performing one show with a totally different theater on the weekend. And so I had 1 3-month period where I literally had like two, it wasn't a day. It was like a time period, like an afternoon or an evening or a morning. Like two big times of block open for 3 months. And it wasn't sustainable. And I actually became really stressed out and not fun to be around. I found out what, it took me about a year to figure out like what the local community was. And I found Balloon HQ, which is the big thing in the US back then, and really loved the idea that I could do something for fun and get paid. So I spent the next, 5 years trying to figure out how to do it. You know, I'm so glad that the first community I got into was a clown community, which they said, oh, if you do balloons, you got to do clowns. You got to be a clown. Like, okay. Like, so I'm going out, talking about a place to be bad. I'm going out in whiteface, which, and I remember I was in full whiteface with like a purple wig, and it's not good whiteface, right? There's
sure,
good whiteface
sure.
to be seen. There's some quality clowns out there, and I respect the heck out of them, but I was not one of them at the time. And it was because I just didn't get it. You know, there were good clowns in this clown alley, but either the way they taught or what I was focusing on was like, okay, you got to look the part. And so I did that. But I remember being in full white face and this guy comes up to me and I was working a restaurant doing balloons. He's like flirting with me. I'm like, this is so weird. I don't know whether to be creeped out or complimented, or it was really strange. And then I ended up not clowning so much. And I realized, like, it's just not for me, you know, even after I spent a lot of money on a really great clown outfit and really, you know, learned my makeup and learned that skill. I thought, you know, I don't know if makeup clown's for me. So clown makeup, it wasn't really a good fit. And for my, and I didn't think I was all that funny. So what I would do at restaurants, I didn't know what to say to people. Like, I wasn't funny. Everybody was like, learn your patter for each. I'm like, I can't remember my name some days. Like, seriously, what's up with this? So I would just talk to kids and like make them the star of the table. Like, and no one ever talks to kids, right? Directly. And if there's other grownups to talk to. And so they're just so thrilled to have attention from a grown-up, and a special grown-up that's got balloons. How cool is that, right? That it ended up being more like that. We just had conversations. And so I was never, I've never done that thing where yeah, a couple of things where I have a whole routine to go with something, but I am willing to throw that out the door if I just have a conversation with the kids. And I have little things that are funny that we do, but I'm not somebody who's going to have like patter to really anything.
Hey, you know, as you talk about that, and I totally agree, having done some balloon restaurant stuff and not the guy that does any patter, just comes up and has conversations with kids and talks to them and finds out what they're, you know, what they're interested in or what show they're watching. And for somebody to express interest in that is huge for kids. And I think sometimes we forget that we have that opportunity to influence even in a short amount of time. Now, think about if somebody jumping into this profession or even considering moving into this profession as a performer, what would be your first advice to them?
Find your tribe. Find a local community. You may or may not fit well in that community, but you will, by joining the local community, you will find the one you fit in. You'll get mentors. When you get really involved in the community, you'll give back by mentoring, not because you're like, okay, now it's time, but people will ask you questions because you'll show up as somebody who, you know, 10 years later has a lot of flight time and you can be the one giving advice and giving back. And a lot of the people in our communities who teach really don't do it for the money. Some people do. And they, you know, like, you know, I'm going to teach this class and now buy my props or buy my notes or buy my whatever. They have so much to teach that they're just giving you a tip of the iceberg and they have more. So yes, they are making money, but that's not why they teach. And the reason that they have more to sell you after the, you know, after whatever it is, this is more the magic and entertainer conventions, less of the balloon conventions. Is because people have said, I want more, rather than what can I sell these people and how can I figure out how to make it into a sales pitch for this convention. And so if the ones who go to it from, I've got stuff to share because I see people having trouble with this, or I have a new idea, or I have an idea I'm excited about, and then it becomes a product because more people want it, that's a good teacher.
That's good. That's good.
And I love that because you can tell that they're totally passionate and their reason to do it is because of sharing.
You mentioned teachers. Is there somebody you would say, well, this was my mentor. This is the person that brought me along to where I could do this as a profession.
There are two that are really significant. One was Guido Verhoef. I don't know if you know him. He's from the Netherlands. He and his wife, I met them. I think it was the first convention I ever went to. It was a TJAM in Austin. And I just, we had a wonderful conversation one night. Like, you know how we all hang out in the lobby. Before anybody had the idea of maybe we'll have a jam room, right? We just all hanging out in the lobby. So, and I ended up, Guido and I talked the first night and then I met his wife later on that week and they invited me to come and live with them and study clowning in Holland, which like, seriously? And he had never seen me perform. He just saw my personality. He's like, and I asked him, why do you want me to come and like work for your company when you don't know if I'm any good? He's like, no, you got the personality. You
know, that is good.
I assume that that was taking a huge, huge risk. And so I studied clowning with them. And that's one of the best things I ever did, is because they clown differently in Europe. And it's more about the clown coming from inside, and it's not about the makeup, where makeup is, some people use it, some people don't. They tend to go less makeup because a lot of the laws in, at least in the Netherlands, you can't drive in makeup. It's illegal. So you actually have to get to your gig, stop, have coffee with the person who booked you. I'm not sure why. Every single gig we had coffee with the person who booked us. It was a thing. Somebody comes over to your house to fix something, you offer them coffee and you have coffee together. Like, that was such a cool tradition. And Dutch coffee is amazing. Then we'd get into our little green room and put our outfit on and our any makeup that we were going to wear, and then do the gig, and then we'd get out of costume and then go home. I think that's one of the reasons it's simpler, because we don't have time, 30 minutes to put our makeup on and make it perfect. I learned so much there. And it's also, I went to a clown's weekend and it was all in Dutch. Mm. And I had a couple of people hanging out and doing a lot of translation for me if somebody was doing a lecture. But I think I had to really watch the physicality of people. And before I realized how much of clowning really is physical, because I didn't come in it from that. You know, if I would have come in it from the variety arts area, I would have understood that naturally. That was the first time when I thought, you know what, maybe it's not about being funny verbally. And that was a huge light bulb coming out in my head. And the other mentor that really made a difference to me is my husband, Buster Balloon.
Oh, shocking.
Yeah. Well, and I have had so many others, so I kind of feel bad. I'm sure there's somebody really important that I'm leaving out.
Oh, I can't think of a better mentor than Buster. I mean, I have got to have at least 8 or 12 of his DVDs sitting on a shelf
that awesome.
I have used over and over again.
Thank you for your support. Yes. So actually, that's one of the things where, like, I don't know if he started making, like, I don't know what the original thought when he started making DVDs, but I know at first he was like, sure, I'll come to the convention, but I can't afford it. But I got stuff to teach. And so it became like, you know, like that teaching paid for the convention. But I don't know. The one thing he did for me was, I was at the point where I wanted to do a show, but I'd done so many shows with directors. I didn't know how to do a show without a director or a script, which I wasn't even good at improv back then. I didn't think I was good at improv. Like, I was doing it and didn't realize I was doing it. But like, as far as getting on stage and getting an idea of what I wanted to do, I had no idea. And so he actually, at Twist and Shout, he taught a Sunday class. I remember it was $25, and he, said that if you take this class, you have permission to use all these routines, which that's insane. And I asked him why he was doing it. We were dating by this time. And I'm like, that's crazy. Why are you doing that? He's like, I need to push myself to come up with new material. I've been doing the show for like 3 or 4 years, and I don't want to get stale. And that right there blew my mind. Mm. And I thought, how is he ever going to, and he's got all new material, right? So that was really how I started. And none of that material really fit me well. I use like one thing sometimes. I'm more of the Magic School Bus. Like, I get compared to the Magic School Bus lady all of the time. And I've seen like two of the episodes. I'm like, great. That's a compliment, I think. I am like that. I'm like the cool teacher. And I even get asked, like, in the line to 7-Eleven randomly, are you a teacher? Like, I have no, like, do I dress like a teacher? Do I carry myself like a teacher? I don't know. And I've always had that soccer mom look anyway. So, it didn't fit me, but it was really great to have a jumping off point.
I totally understand. I mean, I have a theater background myself. Mm-hmm. And like, you're used to having a script. You have a director. They, mm-hmm. you know, here's what I'm going to say. Here's where I'm going to walk. They're going to block me to do that. Mm-hmm. And then to walk out on the stage and not have any of that and say, okay, now what? Yeah. I completely understand.
One of the best theater classes I ever took, though, was very much prepared me for writing my own shows. It was a musical theater class. And I remember we were doing something from Sweeney Todd, A Little Priest, just that my partner, we partnered up with people. The premise was, you're in a show, it's not going well. Your director is busy dealing with other people, putting out fires. He or she does not have time to block your scene. Go. And that was one of the very best preparations for anything, because it made me think, okay, why am I doing all of this? And working with a director, you do have to have the knowing that, like, know what your job is as an actor. You do need to take direction from your director. But I remember right after that, it was about a month afterwards or two, I was doing Nonsense and we were rehearsing and I got the courage to say, hey, you know what? I have been working on a few moves for, you know, a little bit of blocking for this. Would you like to see kind of what I've come up with? And she was a great director. So she said, yes. And she ended up keeping almost all the stuff I did. And it was more natural because I knew I had really thought about how the character would be telling the story in the song. Right. So that, that really prepared me. See, I've had so many, and Larry Moss, BHQ guy. And like, he's done so many things. He's amazing. I licensed his Mousetrap show and that taught me show structure. Mm. And, because I like literally pretty much memorize the show, like as much as I memorize anything anymore. That was actually one thing that was really tough for me when I was doing theater, is it took me a long time to memorize. One time for my birthday, Buster gave me a photo shoot because I'd only done one photo shoot ever. And I was so like inept, and it worked out okay. But I was like, I put it off because I don't like taking photos, and I still don't, just because I'm not in the habit of doing it. And it is a lot of trouble to fix my makeup and fix my hair and, you know, things like that. But it's, and really think through what would be good photos. So, I mean, having a really good photo shoot is a lot of work. But so he actually helped me get over that. And I don't use any of those pictures anymore.
Pictures are so valuable.
Oh, they are. That's one of the things for a new performer. If you are, especially if you're breaking into a new market or something, get a really good photographer, but you don't have to have the best, just the best you can afford. Right. Mm-hmm. And then get really good advice on your costuming and your, if you can get somebody to be a director. And that sounds weird to a director for standing still, but what it is it's somebody who's going to help you decide what photos to take, right? So like, you want to brainstorm and say, well, I want all of these photos and here are some of the ones I like. But if you don't get another person's opinion, a lot of times the photos can end up being just like everybody else's. And so that's not a good marketing concept, in my opinion, unless you're the only one in your market, and then you won't be forever. So might as well start out well. But if you get somebody to say, have you thought of doing this? What about this? You know, so those two things, a good director, a good photographer, and have the final rights to those photos. Do not, I mean, this doesn't happen very often, but it used to be photographers would say that they retain the rights to the original photos. Mm. Just don't do that. But yeah. There's a, by the way, for anybody starting, and I'm going to do a recommendation of Michael Messing. They're experts at children's performers.
Yeah, because they are performers.
They
understand the whole thing. Yes, I've got several photos by Michael and several of them on my website that are promo photos by Michael. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're looking for a a photographer and you want somebody really good, Michael would be my first choice.
He's usually at Kadabra. It's been a couple of other places, but I know that that's where, or you can just like look him up and find out where he is. But the one thing I like about them is they will give you ideas that you don't originally have, but mm-hmm. they're also open to your specific ideas. So Buster and I always come up with specific ideas, but I know that I've had other people who they're just, you know, they need good promo photos and they have no idea what they want to do. They'll just sit down and talk with them and they'll come up with something wonderful. And
yeah, my experience was that the very first time I had photos taken with Michael is I just brought in three puppets. I brought in a bunch of twisted balloons mm-hmm. and just tell me what to do with it.
Yeah.
And they came out awesome
right.
pictures.
Right. And they just know, and they know how to make you feel relaxed.
It's good. Okay. You mentioned briefly earlier, Facebook, social media.
Uh-huh.
How valuable do you see that? How do you use it?
Hardly at all. I've not had anything to say on social media except for to the people who are like me. So performers, right? Nothing to say to muggles. Like, you know, I do that while I twist and I just have them bring up the, you know, I used to say that, yeah, I do small talk for a living, right? Because when I did restaurants, because that's what it was about. But like, I never could think of anything I wanted to say on social media. And now it's completely the opposite. I have to stop myself from sharing things because you know what? That's probably not appropriate. know? So for years, my social media, I was always really active, but it was just within my community. So as far as being social media to my customers, that was a totally different thing. And I would take a lot of classes on, you know, how to work the algorithm, how to do this, how to do that. And then I realized what Buster's superpower is he's developing relationships with all of these people, even if he's never met them.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that's my superpower in person. And I don't have that same superpower so much on social media with kids. He does. It's just, you know, and I don't know if he's just spent more time developing it or if it's just a natural thing for him. I don't have a whole lot of advice for social media, but other than think of what would be useful to whoever your audience is. So Tamar Kimmons, John Kimmons's wife,
mm-hmm.
He's known mm-hmm. as Kimmo. She's less known, but just as good of a performer. She does a lot of games and she's like so delightful. I took a games class from her one time and fell in love with the idea of games and never did them, but it was because she was doing it. She also had a course called Facebook Fundamentals, really understanding what your customers need and providing it for them. So for birthdays, it was like, okay, share tips on birthday cakes. There's two things about this. So one had a party planner, like a birthday party planner that she would send out and was all branded, right? So she's getting her branding out there, but she's giving a gift. It's all about doing a video of the party for your people, where he has certain times and he gives his camera or his phone to the birthday dad and says, here are the moments you need to take video. And then like he uses iMovie on the phone to like literally spend a few minutes putting the video together and sending it to them. And that gets shared like crazy. So not only is it something that's super, super useful, both of these things, right? Mm-hmm. It's also something that totally markets you and kind of, it's like the free sample, right? I've looked at what's given out at conventions and things like that. And I'm realizing every piece of my marketing needs to be a gift. And for a really long time, I didn't have business cards at all. I still don't have business cards for my performing because that's not my audience, right? So if I did a trick with a business card, I was a magician. Yeah, you bet. If I worked with adults and did something cool and it was a gift, that experience was a gift. Or, you know, I did something where it would make sense to give business cards because I'm marketing to corporate people. Yeah. But if I'm marketing to kids and their families and librarians, I'm going to do something that is a gift. So seriously, bookmarks for the library, but not just a regular bookmark with my information on it, but a bookmark that goes with whatever the show is and,
right,
or that has like cool things on it, or, you know, just again, if I'm just giving somebody my business card, even though it's going to be wonderful if they hire me, the business card really has no value other than that. But if I give somebody a gift, whatever it is, it's going to be valuable whether they hire me or not. And they're going to remember that value and they'll remember that experience. And then they're going to keep that. That's going to go on their fridge or whatever, you know. And everything you're doing builds value. Like your every interaction should be a bit of a gift. Right. So
that's good. That's good.
Yeah. And I think if you live your life that way, people end up giving gifts back to you.
Oh, and definitely. Like,
emotional gifts are my favorite. Like, you know, just I've posted a lot of pictures lately about, I just did a photo shoot for Christmas. We were doing Christmas cards for the first time ever, family Christmas cards, because, you know, we had some time on our hands. So Buster did Santa this year virtually, and we did some photos, and I was trying to find a Christmas outfit and nothing fits because I'm literally 4 or 5 sizes smaller depending on the brand. Right. So I took all these pictures of like how it fits now. And I'm like wrapping the whole entire jacket around, or, you know, showing here's how big the pants are, and about like, literally, I do not have any Christmas clothes right now, other than this cool shirt that I bought at like a grocery store, the ones you get for $5. And you're like, oh, that's kind of cute. Oh, I'll never be able to wear that, but it's cute. I might just make it into something. And then years later, I'm like wearing it because it's like a medium, right? So that was like so exciting for me. But so I'm posting all these pictures, and just the support that people have been given me, just like you give out, you get back what you give out. And so if you give out positivity and wonderfulness, then you'll get it back. If you give out, well, Chris Weed, if you give out sarcasm, you'll get back sarcasm. And, you know, with him, it's a game. And with the people he gets back with, it's a game, right? And it's fun. So that's awesome for him. And I enjoy the heck out of him. But then when you know him, he's a completely different person, because he's a really super giving guy. And
oh, he is. You can't outgive Chris.
He's someone who's given me such great advice. And that's, again, I've given people good advice, and it's not always the same people I get advice back from. And that's not why I'm giving it. It's not a, you know, I'll give you something if you give me something. I just give it out there. And I help people, and then people will help me back. Usually not the same people. It's like, you know, you give to the universe and the universe gives back, but it's not really, you know, probably that's how it works. You reap what you sow. There's so many different ways to put it, but it's the energy. If you give out a certain type of energy, you'll get that energy back.
It's good. And that's really good.
I love that. And I don't know why, but it's something that, you know, you don't need to know how gravity works to use to your advantage, right? And just to make a wonderful life, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
I hope I answered your question. I don't even know what it was.
Perfect, perfect answer.
I warned you that I just tend to go off into a tangent.
That's fine. That's fine. Okay. People in the industry, if you said, hey, these are three or four people that you really should know if you're a performer, who would you name?
Well, here's the deal. I've had so many, there are so many amazing people out there being totally generous. Of course, Buster, but I'm really like, of course, I'm a little biased there.
What I would agree 100%.
Christopher Barnes has been done a million things. He's like, you can't stop that man's creativity. And he runs a Facebook group and just, he's so generous. But then like over the years, so many people, I think the people, and this is why I must have taken it in this direction. So many people that I would recommend organize things. And they build communities because you got to find your tribe, right? And if you don't have a tribe, you build a tribe. And this is what a lot of people do. Larry Moss did it with, you know, there's so many other people involved in BHQ, but he kind of was the spearhead of it. And, you know, T. Myers kind of built that, you know, Patty Sorrell. And I mean, there's people building things now all over the place. We used to think that the only community was Balloon HQ, but that's because our world was so small before Facebook. And then we found out all of a sudden we would go to a conference and, you know, a convention or something and find out like there are people in other countries who are doing this. Like, oh my gosh, it's not just an American thing. Like, well, it's never just been an American thing, but, you know, we didn't see internationally. That's actually, I love social media for, I mean, there are a lot of problems with social media. Do not get me wrong. But one of the good things is that it broadens your view geographically. And you're able to see people all over the world doing things that you can find, you can join their tribe or make a tribe together. So specifically people who have built tribes, Mark Daniel, and Tanami Daniel said, hey, there's no convention for kids magicians. And instead of complaining about it, they just developed one, right? And same with Lee Andrews. He runs American Clown Academy with a group of people. He is the only one I know well. And again, I don't like actually have that memory file. You know, that memory chip that you get when you're a kid, you know, when you're born without one. So I will forget because I couldn't remember Tom's name, but it's he heads up with a group of amazing people, American Clown Academy. And he wasn't the one that started it. I don't think, I don't know that whole story. We came in when he started putting it together. He is just a total giver. Twist and Shout, Patty's, and she also has a group of people that help her with that. A huge advice I'd give to anybody wanting to do what they love for a living, learn how to run a business. And so many of us, and it shows in balloon artists so much because we're like, you know, hey, we're doing this for fun on the weekends, right? And, you know, I don't need to charge a lot. Bag of balloons is 10 bucks. What you don't realize is the overhead, right? So not only if you don't charge enough, you're not helping yourself because you can't grow your business and you establish yourself at the lower price point, but then also you're hurting the industry because people can't tell the difference between a good performer who's going to charge a decent hourly rate to somebody who is just coming and, you know, I like to call them navel gazers. And you're just going to sit there and, you know, and not have any kid skills or anything like that.
Right.
So, learn about business. Yeah. Don't discount your customers. They will pay you a lot, but you have to be worth it. You know, it's not just, you know, everybody charge more because we should charge more. You have to earn that. But here's some ways to earn it. And there's other people, my friend Suzanne Herring, very good friend of mine. She used to say, up your rates or up yours. And that it's, you have to, but it has to be in context. And what it means is once you get good, charge more.
Right.
There are so many reasons for it. There are people who should not be charging yet or should not be charging a lot because they're new. That's okay. But you need to charge what you're worth. And it doesn't mean you can't do a free gig once in a while. We do free gigs for certain reasons. Mm-hmm. Some because we give back. We have charities that we work with that on purpose. We choose them and we work with them. But then also, if it's something where I am doing it because I'm getting a lot of advertising for it, like not just people will, all my friends have money and they'll hire you. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, if I'm going to be at this event, all right, so call me a sponsor and I get all of these sponsor privileges mm-hmm. and this, you know, I'll send you all my artwork and I'm officially a sponsor, you know, and so that it's a package worth, you know, a couple of $1,000. All right, then maybe I won't. You know, if I get all that, I would have paid for that anyway as a sponsor. That's value. You know, there's so many reasons where you might not have an hourly rate, but I think it's important to for the value of entertainers, especially. I think people are starting to value entertainers a lot more during COVID.
Yes,
because they realize that they wouldn't have gotten through this without their Netflix binge, you know, and look for people in general who are building tribes.
That's good. Good advice. We have such a freedom to do that.
Yes, we do.
It's so much easier today to do that. One, to find a tribe, or if not mm-hmm. build your own, it's so much easier to do that today.
Right. And building them because it's for the community, not building a tribe because they want to get really great speaking fees or whatever. Right?
Right.
Again, look at the reason behind it. And somebody, when they're building the tribe for the right reason, which is often this doesn't exist. I think this should exist. Let's do this. And it's like, hey kids, let's put on a show. You know, back.
That's good.
That was Andy Rooney and Judy Garland. But yeah, you can tell where my I listen to musical theater music.
Oh, I love musical theater.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah. Like, I'm the show tune queen. So, yeah, don't come over to my house unless you like show tunes. Often I will listen to them in my headset so my husband doesn't have to put up with them.
Okay, as we wrap up, if you were speaking to a new performer or just a performer that wanted to be better or somebody that wanted to be better in their business, what would you say are the top three things they need to do to be successful?
My first thing, involvement in a thriving community, since we were just talking about that. Mm-hmm. Find your tribe. Give. Accept advice when you need it. Be open to what they're saying. Be open to learning personal development. And then second thing is continuous work on yourself and your skills.
Mm.
Whatever your skill is, and it's not just, I'm a balloon twister, I need to get better at balloons. Well, unless you don't want to entertain, maybe you need to also get better at interacting with your audience. You know, whatever it is that you are doing in your art, get better at it. And anything that supports your art, such as developing relationships with your clients or with your other performers or whatever like that. And then third one, get as much flight time as possible. When you're new, you want to perform as much as you can. Do a balloon storytelling course with CV. And one of my pieces of advice is if you, you know, it's hard. It's to get promo material for this. You could get a bunch of people together to do some kind of a, you could hire actors, right? And have them do poses and, you know, do a video with poses, but it's better to just have live footage of a show. But how do you get live footage if nobody will hire you? Well, find somebody who literally cannot afford to pay you and go and make a deal with them and get that you know, not only get the experience, have a place to be bad, but also get the promo video and promo photos that you need to help market yourself. They'll be happy to have a free show and you've got something incredibly valuable. I still use some of my promo stuff from years and years ago. Well, okay, that's weird because like literally I've had a physical transformation the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. I need to get a bunch of new video. So I actually might go to some of my favorite clients and say, hey, I need to do a free show for you. And they're going to go, what? And I'm going to explain what's going on because, you lose 65 pounds and you'll look way different and you perform way differently. Oh,
that's
right?
So true.
Right. And so maybe, you know, four things. Take care of yourself.
Wow.
Take care of yourself as a physical person, because that is your instrument as well. So I guess it's continuous. That's part of the continuous work on skills. You also have to work on being healthy, because if you're not healthy, then you're not going to be as good a performer. When I was having the most trouble walking, it's a long story, but I was having trouble walking partly because of my weight. And I was trying to, I remember one summer, it was built around how can I take the fewest amount of steps per show?
Mm.
And that's not a way that serves my customer. I was amazed when I got booked that next year by anybody who booked me that summer, because I was in so much pain and I was so, you know, it was all about how can I survive the summer rather than how can I do a good show? Mm. And when it gets to that point, that's not serving anybody, including yourself. But I mean, as performers, I want to say more importantly, your customers. If you're not delivering a good experience, the best experience you possibly can because of your physical health, you're doing a disservice. You're not the best performer that you can be. And I didn't realize that until like I had to experience being embarrassed about my performance. Now, the people I've talked to, a few of the librarians that I performed for, and they say, no, that was our favorite show, but it's because I had the flight time to figure out what they really, really wanted was like, why don't we create a story together? And it was all about like, you know, the kids were creating the story, but a lot of it was me sort of teaching.
Mm.
And, you know, standing in one place, leaning against a table, like sort of sitting on the table. So they liked it because it was what they needed and that it was something that no one else was doing. And so, yeah, that was awesome that I took that limitation, that obstacle, and went through it. So it ended up being good. But still, it was to serve me instead of them. It just ended up, because I've got the flight time, I figured out how to make it serve them as well. But looking back on that, it wasn't sustainable. There's no way I could have done another year. Mm. If we don't take care of ourselves, you can't serve your customer. And that's why we do it. We do this because we love it. If we can do anything else, like for full-timers, seriously, if you want to go full-time, make sure that you're not going to be happy doing anything else. If you're going to be happy, like fulfilled and happy doing something else full-time for a living, do it. Because this is hard to be a full-timer. It's worth it if it's what you love,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's hard. And I'm actually transitioning to working in the health field instead of being a full-timer. So for my full-time thing, I'm working as a health coach now, right now, because there's no gigs. But when we come back, I don't think that I'm going to go back full-time because I want to go back to the joy of it, because I'm feeling really fulfilled in what I'm doing, coaching. I look at the things that I was creating as a performer. And for me, it's not about the applause. It's not about, believe it or not about the laughter, which it feels wonderful. But what I really would constantly come back to is I'm encouraging the kids that they can, that what they need to be a wonderful person is already inside of them. You know, you can write your own stories. You can be creative. You've got so many things inside of you. You just need to, you know, let them out. And then I'm also building community. Mm. I'm building community within like the library community. I'm there to like do a family fun night. So I'm trying, I think the elementary school community is really important. So those two things I do as a health coach. So that's what brings me satisfaction and joy and a real reward. But I still love the performing. And so I'm never going to stop. I'll probably just end up doing it for libraries because it's my favorite kind of show. But again, if you want to go full-time, don't go full-time just for the cachet of being a full-time performer or because you want to sleep in on Monday morning, which I did that for so long. Like every Monday morning, I would sleep on purpose because I could. But it's about like, it's a whole heck of a lot of work. And sometimes you're going to go out and you're going to perform when you don't feel like it. But not only that, it's easy to perform when you don't feel like it because you just get caught up into it and, you know, everybody else is happy. You just do it. But can you market when you don't feel like it? Mm. Can you do all the grunt work that you don't want to do anyway that you have to do to run a business? Can you get your contracts out? Can you, you know, go to the post office? I mean, all that stuff that we don't necessarily want to do. Can you do that when you don't feel like it? Because you love being a full-time performer enough. So I know you didn't ask for that question, but I just
That's great. That was great. Well, hey, as we wrap up.
You get me started. I'm never stopping.
As we wrap up, I want to just say thank you again, Annie, for taking the time, spending the time with us today and sharing what is a lot of really great advice. I would encourage people to listen, take notes, and apply what you heard today. So thanks, Annie, for being with us.
Oh, my gosh. It was so fun.
If this is your first time tuning in, I encourage you to subscribe to the show so that you can hear all the great episodes that we have coming up in the next few weeks.